Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
What kind of economy? What direction? What do we want to be at the center of our economy? We want to look after human beings. We want to make sure everybody's rights are protected. Everybody's got some education, health care, some house to live in. You know what I mean, Sylvia? We want a kind of human-centered economy, not an economy that's just for the owners of big capital who can make maximum profit, the sole, you know, motivation in life. This is not a way to build a nation, not a way to build a society.
That's the voice of longtime activist and community journalist Charles Borland. On this week's show, we speak to Charles about the Harper government's anti-democratic dismantling of Canadian institutions like the Wheat Board and the fight for the direction of our economy moving forward. Stay tuned for the interview right after this short song.
Se han desatado las calles del odio. Sagrados vientres quieren mancillar. Violan pureza, desangran la vida. Nuestro destino quieren doblegar. Seres oscuros que engañan al tiempo. Los lleva, los trae, los vuelve a juntar. Pálidas caras, sonrisa de muerte, comprando naciones, quieren dominar. Mi tierra es madre, mi patria es hembra, un continente que no se deja. En la trinchera combatiré, un buen soldado, buena mujer. Mi tierra es madre, mi patria es hembra, un continente que no se deja en la trinchera.
Reposa en el vientre de la mujer latinoamericana. Es la liberación, es el amor, es el reencuentro en el centro de la vida. La mujer luchadora, revolucionaria de los tiempos, paridora del futuro de la patria.
Somos el grito del parto a la vida, matriz de amor, matriz de ilusión, fruto rociado con savia divina, fuente perpetua de liberación. Somos la fuerza, defiendo mi patria. La revolución mi destino marcó. Mi comandante ordena avanzada, mujeres. Juro por Dios, detendré al invasor. Tierra es madre, mi patria es hembra, un continente que no se deja en la trinchera. Combatiré.
was the incredible lyrics and music of Jovis Nando Canto. And that melody really speaks to a call to the importance that women play in any revolution, in any kind of transformative process, to the call of Jovis Nando Canto, that responsibility is one that concerns each and every one of us. I'm very privileged to have with us journalist Charles Boylan. He has been well known for his program Wake Up with Co-op, which ran for over 10 years, and he now does the show Ideas on Co-op Radio. We're very privileged to have him on our program. Thank you for joining us.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be with you, Sylvia, and Stuart as well. The program's actually called Discussion, but you could well call it Ideas. It's the CBC program, but the idea is the same, which is to hold an intelligent discourse with people who are engaged in struggles to defend the land and to defend the rights of every human being who live on the land, because we are human beings, and it's the society, of course, we're paying first rate attention to as we live with nature.
Thank you so much for correcting me. I apologize.
but
you know what? You're right. It is a show about ideas that not only make the connections, but also invite us to be critical of the kinds of policies that are put in place in our name, right? In the so-called benefit of all. When we think about the world today, you know, we are becoming communities that are heavily dependent on food and health that is delivered through commodified and industrialized ways. And health is so vital to any practical society, right? Any society that wants to, have long-term existence needs to think about health. I wonder if we could begin by, starting a discussion about the need to have our own food production and the role that certain institutions have played in that safety net, as it is the wheat boar. I wonder if we could begin there.
Sure. Sylvia, this is the Canadian Wheat Board is a very, very important Canadian creation, and it actually grew out of the struggle of the producers of grain, the wheat farmers of Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, and to some extent British Columbia as well in the northeast corner. And they fought first against the rail monopolies, who were, basically extorting the farmers for very high prices for transportation and so on, and they waged quite an important struggle in the period after World War One to build cooperatives and then to put pressure on government that the railroad should be held to account. And in the end, it was what they gave rise to was what they called the Single Desk Marketing Board for wheat and barley. And basically, Sylvia, what this farmers' institution did was it studied all the world prices for wheat, and they had to develop their intellectual expertise in analyzing what was the real cost of production for the farmers, then what the farmer, and usually it was because a family farm is a partnership, between the wife and the husband and the kids. And then, of course, they hire help in certain parts of the season and so on and so forth. So they had to do all the economics of it. They had to figure out all this and then what should be the proper price for the grain. And then, you see, by having a single market, a single desk, what it enables you to do is enables you to give the same price to every farmer and not give some special advantage to a farmer who happens to live right next to the railroad track. Could have a special deal with this grain monopoly purchaser and so on and so forth. So it kind of gave a level playing field. It gave a kind of equilibrium to the farmers in their relationship with the railroad companies, the shipping companies, the grain monopolies like the Cargills and the Archer Daniel Midlands and the other big grain monopolies that are mostly situated in the United States. And there's another significant factor too, Sylvia, in terms of world food. And that is, the Canadian Wheat Board took upon itself the idea that food politics should not be played. What do I mean by food politics? Let me give you an example. In the 1950s, China got into a serious food crisis internally. The government of Mao Zedong of the day, they went to the United States and they said, look, we have money, but we don't have enough grain to feed our people. We would like to buy grain. U.S. government at that time said, we don't like your government, and we're going to exclude you from our grain production. And they made a policy, a state policy, and they said, we're not going to allow the grain companies to trade with you, sell you the grain. The Canadian Wheat Board stepped up to the plate, and they said, you know what? We don't have such a policy. We don't make politics a precondition for selling grain to people. Grain is food. People deserve the food. If you have the money, we'll sell you the grain. And Canada made a very historic move at that time to trade with China. And that was always the Wheat Board's policy. And so they played a very, very important role as a kind of monopoly in terms of the Canadian grain in selling it to all the countries equally around the world. And when you, for example, when you're saying countries to say a bunch of small African countries, then you have to plan, okay, well, you say you're going down the west coast of Africa. You have to plan well in advance. You know, okay, we're going to stop at this port. They're going to get so many tons of this kind of grain. They're going to stop at this port. Ship is going to go here, there, there, there. And they developed this very, very well-oiled machine across Canada that involved the Great Lakes, the shipping from, say, Thunder Bay out through the St. Lawrence Seaway system with transit points in places like Port Cartier and Trois-Rivières on the St. Lawrence River, taking it further. And then they developed the port at Churchill on the Hudson's Bay, little town of about 800 people, 200 of whom, by the way, get jobs during the summer loading the ships, being part of that grain trade. Those ships have a very quick access to European ports, even to Latin American ports. So we developed a very all-Canadian system around the Canadian Wheat Board. And in Vancouver here, unfortunately, most Vancouverites don't fully appreciate how important the grain trade is to us. We have one, two, three, at least four grain elevators here. We have Viterra on the Vancouver side in two places, the old UGG, used to be United Grain Growers, and the one near the swimming pool there in the New Brighton Park. And that used to be the Alberta Wheat Pool, which was a co-op, which got privatized and then turned first to Cargill and then to Viterra. Then on the North Shore, when you look on the North Shore, you'll see the big orange grain silo there. And that one used to be at Saskatchewan Wheat Board. It's now Cargill. And the one next to it is Richardson. So what do we have here now? We have, say, four major terminals exporting grain every day in ships. And so we have about 600 or 700 grain handlers who take the grain from the trains, but the train drivers, of course, the railroad workers pulling the grain here. Then we have the cleaning and grading the grain. We have a group of workers, highly skilled, women and men. They work for what is called the Canadian Grain Commission. They're in PSAC, that's the Federal Employees Union, and they take the grain samples and they ensure that it has a certain percentage of protein and what the water percentage is, the quality of the grain, and they grade it. Now, this is another important factor about the Canadian Wheat Board, Sylvie, because we have established over the decade a reputation for selling exact quality. If you buy, say you're a Tokyo miller and you want a, you know, grade A hard Canadian Manitoba wheat for your pizza in Tokyo, you know when you buy that from the Canadian Wheat Board, that's exactly what you get. And so we have a very high reputation. People trust us and they, you know, we've established this in the international market.
I think that for me, what is most important is what you just pointed out is the connections that these farmers have to their communities and the connections to the land. We've seen how...
And the connections to the whole world, Sylvia. Let me tell you, this, we're feeding a lot of people. Canada is not the biggest grain grower in the world, but we are the biggest grain exporter in the world. And it's very, very... We're talking $6 billion. And as you said, grain, these farmers have very close ties in their communities and with the West Coast workers here, with the railway. We're all connected together. This is why it's such an important institution. And that now Harper has arbitrarily eliminated it. He has violated the federal law that said if you're going to change the Wheat Board in any substantial way, you have to take a vote amongst the farmers. The farmers held their own vote. They said they wanted to keep the Canadian Wheat Board. They voted over 65% to do that, a bigger vote than Harper got when he got elected to government. He's only got 40% of the vote. And then Harper said, I don't care about the vote. I don't care about the law. We are a parliament. We can make any law we want anytime we want. Well, excuse me. So, you know, he's basically fired all the farmer elected directors of the Canadian Wheat Board, put his own people in there. And now every farmer is going to make their own individual contracts, what he calls freedom of the market. Well, there's no freedom of the market, Sylvia, when the whole market is dominated by literally four or five giant grain monopolies on the world scale. And they will dictate to the farmers the price. And they'll also dictate the, and here's the most important thing, they're going to dictate the price plus the quality of the grain on the world market. Canada's Wheat Board was the last centralized wheat board in the world, and they smashed the one in the Soviet Union, the old Soviet Union in Russia, they smashed the one in Australia. And so this is a really important issue for the health of the people, yeah, for sure.
One of the other connections that I think we need to make is that, you know, our food is also connected to our health, and the kinds of things that we put in our environment affect our health and our well-being. Under this, here in BC, the Liberal government is promoting a kind of economic buoyancy based on more mines. The Christy Clark government has come out and said that there's going to be 10 new mines in British Columbia. And I just want to talk a little bit about the kinds of destruction that this make, and the connections to the impact this has on agricultural land, on people who get displaced. Can we talk a little bit about this kind of focus on technologies, on fossil fuel and mining interests that seem to be contrary to where we need to be going today in the midst of an ecological crisis?
Okay, Sylvia, but just before I leave that wheat board issue, let me just give a little cautionary flag here. In the Fraser Valley, we have what is, and in BC generally, we have what is called, and we have another marketing board. It's called the Supply Side Marketing Board for eggs, poultry, and dairy. This is also very critical in terms of monitoring the quality of the food product that we eat. And lots of people say, oh, well, you can go to the States, you've got free market, you can buy anything. Yes, but you don't know what's in the chicken. You don't know what's in the butter. You don't know what's in the eggs. We know what's there because it's marketing board which supervises the quality. And they guarantee the price of the farmer, and they help protect producers. They are now under threat. With the wheat board gone, already Harper has gone to Honolulu to meet Obama, and they said, okay, we're going to work out a new Pacific trade policy, blah, blah, blah. And they're threatening that. And you'll notice there's lots of propaganda in the newspapers these days, the media. Oh, we shouldn't be paying these high prices for eggs and chickens and so on in BC. We can, you know, if we eliminate the marketing board, then, you know, everybody fends for themselves and free market, blah, blah, blah. So I'm just warning about that. That's another fight that's coming down the road. And you're quite right to link that with the emphasis on the direction of the economy by these big monopolies toward resource extraction and resource exportation. So we have it in the forest industry, where the last year was the highest exported out of the province in the province's history, and now this big pressure toward just mining and exporting the raw mineral, whether it's copper or gold or silver. And then the other thing, of course, is the Enbridge pipeline and the exportation of bitumen out of the Port of Vancouver, even the Kinder Morgan pipeline that takes Alberta crude bitumen and exports it right out of the harbor here in Vancouver. So this is, as you said, this is a very dangerous, one-sided development of the economy that makes us totally resource-dependent, especially in the oil and gas fields and in mining as well. And it's done with reckless abandon. That's the whole point. When I think of that Italian cruise liner going down, the captain abandoning the ship, I think those are the kind of people who are running our bloody economy. And they will abandon ship, and they do abandon. You know, mine runs out, they abandon the community, they run off, they don't, you know, the profit has gone out, they don't care about the people. There's a recklessness, a social irresponsibility that I think the people in BC have to give very serious discussion and attention to. What kind of economy? What direction? What do we want to be at the center of our economy? We want to look after human beings. We want to make sure everybody's rights are protected. Everybody's got some education, health care, some house to live in. You know what I mean, Sylvia? We want a kind of human-centered economy, not an economy that's just for the owners of big capital who can make maximum profit the sole, you know, motivation in life. This is not a way to build a nation, not a way to build a society.
And one of the things that I think you point out is not only that these struggles need to be interlinked and interconnected, that we need to realize it's up to all of us to make sure that we stand up, not because they directly, you know, they directly impact our job right now, but because they do impact on our way of life, on our possibilities, the kinds of life opportunities that will be open to our children and their children.
Yeah, absolutely. I was discussing with a trade union activist friend of mine this morning. He's from northern BC in the wood industry, and one of the things he was raising with me, he said, Charles, he said, where are our kids and the grandkids going to go for a good union-paying jobs if they close all the sawmills down? In Vancouver now, we don't have any sawmills on the Fraser River virtually. This is more or less all closed down, and the north arm of the Fraser has been converted from an industrial zone into a high-priced condominium area. And so what does the younger generation do for a livelihood? By the way, when I mentioned the woodworkers, of course, were very concerned that there was an explosion in a sawmill in a community up on Highway 16 and Burns Lake. And so we have, our hearts go out to the 19 workers or so who were injured in that. And we're very concerned about that. A lot of First Nations workers in that mill in the carrier country up there. But many of the mills have been closed down, and the people need a livelihood. And so if we don't, with a conscious plan, work out what's the best way to use our resources in a sustainable way, look after Mother Nature, which is, you know, the mother we live with. She's responsible for providing us all the basics, right? And then the human beings who do the labor, who do the work, mental, physical work together, we produce the goods we need. We produce the services that we require, healthcare, education, social, recreation, cultural side, artistic side, all of the aspects that make life, you know, worth living.
You're absolutely right. Thank you so much for being with us. Tell us a little bit about your show on Wednesday evenings, and how can people connect to your work?
Well, the program runs live, Sylvia, from 7 to 8 p.m. on a Wednesday night. Now, it's not always convenient for people to tune in, but I would advocate that they go to the archive. If they go to cooperadio.org, and go to the archive and then search for discussion, they'll find it on the archive, and they can listen. There was an excellent show we did just Wednesday night last with Ken Lorenzo, the president of the Canadian Auto Workers Union, and Guy Caron from the steelworkers. They big struggles going on there. In Lac-Saint-Jean, the workers are trying to fend off Rio Tinto from, you know, wiping out the union there. And in London, on out of diesel workers in a very important industrial plant that makes these, locomotives, they're fighting off Caterpillar, wants to cut their wages in half, if you can believe that. And so that's a very, very informative discussion on the radio there, and you get it by going to the archive of cooperadio.org.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Charles, and I look forward to continue to speak with you about these very important issues.
Well, thank you so much, Sylvia. You guys keep up the good work, you and Stuart. It's a great show.
Take care.
Take care.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.